because you can't go over there.
Maybe you'd like to speak about it on the radio now. If you can, our audience lines are open. You can give a call to 423-5361. Have you been hassled by the police? Have you been unfairly deprived of employment because of your economic status? Have you had a problem with a landlord that has resulted in eviction or some kind of discrimination? Let the public know about it. Put this issue on the air in a public conversation and dialogue. The Free Radio Santa Cruz lines here are open at 423-5361. Give us a call. And indeed, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz you're tuned to at 96.3 FM. You're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, a 2.5 hour Sunday show every Sunday at 11 until 1:30. We present you with interviews, songs, discussion, and hopefully interchange with you about what's going on with civil rights for poor people here in Santa Cruz and around the state. I'm your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse. The show for the last couple of shows has been taken over or recorded because I've been elsewhere, and I have been quite candid that these may well be the last of my shows because I'm looking for a more effective medium to communicate in. I've found that the written medium is often better, at least for my purposes, than radio. But radio is a great medium, and I certainly don't want to abandon Free Radio Santa Cruz when it's under attack from the FCC. As it is, we are, as for those of you who don't know, we've been visited by the FCC about a month ago, and we now face a very hostile ruling and the closure of two radio stations. They voluntarily closed down Free Radio Berkeley and San Francisco Liberation Radio. And along those lines, here's some musical thoughts on the Free Radio Movement and the FCC.
My radio is trying to be free, trying to find its own identity. It said, why should I make profits for some fat ass CEO? Screw the FCC, set your radio free. My radio is trying to stay in line, but it got tired of OJ all the time. It said, why can't I tell people things they really need to know? Screw the FCC, set your radio free. Set your radio free. Set your radio free. Yeah, screw the FCC. Yeah, get your radio. Set your radio free. My radio is feeling so confused about the stuff that's on the evening news. It said, why are all these people telling me what's going on? Screw the FCC. Set your radio free. Just could not take the same old song. It said we could have our own top 10 of songs we like to do. Screw the FCC, set your radio free. Yes, set your radio free. Yes, screw the FCC. Yeah, get your radio, set your radio free. Set your radio free. Yes, screw the FCC. Yeah, get your radio, set your radio.
Screw the FCC.
beautiful, beautiful voice of Carol Denny from her album Failure to Disperse. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. And Carol Denny not only sings, as you've heard, she also speaks. And we were listening to her talk about her attempt to make sure that the Berkeley City Council does not give money to a club that has a ban on her performing from the stage, or a blacklist, as she puts it. And we were talking about that when Ann Turner, San Jose activist, called in, and we spoke about the UN 50th anniversary tribunal by the Kensington Welfare Rights Union happening over in San Jose today. And let's get back now to Carol Denny and what she was saying from Berkeley.
Groups who are trying to work for social justice have difficulty working together. Don't think you're alone, because, you know, it is a combination of factors, and it certainly is partly human nature. But it's also the government. The government spent $250,000 suing me. So, you know, I just want people to keep the big picture in mind. That, yeah, it's very different for me to go up to People's Park now, because now I know that the people with whom I used to go to jail and sing and do creative theater are threatening me. So that's a tough one, but you also got to remember, it's not personal. It's really not. It's part of what they design.
Now, what about the actual situation of the park for people who are homeless and poor, that the cause that many of us, myself included, have been concerned about for the last decade?
Oh, it's very tough. It's very tough. You're actually better off hanging around the periphery, like down here near the freeway. I mean, if you're really traveling through, or if you got no place to go, the park is a very tough place because they watch it all the time. And they have these bizarre rules they thought up about how much stuff you can bring with you. They have literal measurements for the permissibility of a mattress. It's crazy up there. They're so focused on keeping the wrong people out of the park that it's very hard for people. Not that it isn't hard in other parts of Berkeley and in other cities too, but they're really tweaked about People's Park, I'll tell you that.
Now, Food Not Bombs and other groups still feed there, right?
Well, yes, bless their souls. Yeah, they do. That's one of the best programs up there. They have food up there almost every day.
And there's a free clothes box still.
And there's still a free box, which is the other greatest thing up there. You know, right now they have a full-time recreational coordinator up there. This gal, what can I say? It's really weird, because People's Park history, yeah, it's sort of free-form place to hang out. And they're trying to turn it into the sports facility that they had dreamed of.
Are they playing imaginary volleyball games?
Imaginary volleyball. It is kind of like that. But what bothers me is that she's taken over planning events on such a scale, twice monthly, that there isn't room for people's shows. And we have to plan twice monthly shows up there. That's what's permitted under their permit. It's a really tight permit process, so that you can't plan very far ahead. And you know how that is for bands. If you want to get a really big band, and we could do that with People's Park, but they need to commit themselves months and months ahead of time. So, yeah, the park is not in the best shape.
Well, I know you had some victories about 6 to 9 months ago when you successfully blocked, a number of us under your leadership successfully blocked the selection of a, should we say, unsympathetic director up there. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten. Thanks for reminding me. That was a great victory. Yeah, they chose this fellow to implement a sort of a landscape design plan. It must have seemed logical from their angle, because this is the guy who dreamed up the plan. But we hate the plan! he also had been really gratuitously hostile to a lot of the people who have a lot of history with the park, and we just got together and said no, and made it very clear that they had other options and they should explore them.
And did they?
They did. They did, yeah.
And I guess you also were able to
He lost the bid anyway, that's all. Yeah.
You were successfully able to to get the committee, it was the Park Advisory Committee?
Yeah, the Park Community Advisory Board is what they're called, and I don't have a very high opinion of this group, as you can imagine, but at least they recognized that they had inspired such opposition that they had better take a course.
They also recommended that the slap suit to be dismissed, and they sent a letter to that effect to the new chancellor, right?
Well, they were doing that as long as I was able to come to the meetings, but I was recently threatened by by Lisa Stevens, who considers herself a park gardener. This, too, I believe, is just the product and fruition of the slap suit division. And so I'm unable to attend those meetings anymore because I risk being charged with violating the injunction by her. So I don't know what that
is. Hey, and I'll be your bodyguard. I'll come with you, sweetheart.
I wish you would, because I really do need to attend those meetings. As long as I'm not there, they will neglect to hound Birdall to vacate the injunction. And it bothers me a lot because it's work that's very important work. It's much more important than these superficial landscape design changes they want to make to the park. I want to restore free speech in people's parks. I would hope that could be the top priority at some point.
So when is the next meeting, Jim?
It's always the second Thursday in the month. Whatever that is.
Well, we'll see. If my social calendar is free, you never can tell.
Most welcome to come. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like. And shall we get into the social side and talk about Keith?
And that was Carol Denny in an interview we had last night. And you, of course, are still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We are, as I've mentioned, in crisis mode. We really need your contributions, your offers of support, financial, moral, and otherwise. Give us a call on the voicemail at 427-4523. We had a successful benefit last week, but the pressure has stepped up considerably with the new closure of free radio stations in Berkeley and San Francisco. So we are really going to need your help. I'm hoping in the shows ahead, however many of those may be left, to do some interviewing of folks around the Charles Vaughn shooting. Vaughn, you may remember, is the seaside man, elderly black man, who was shot dead on a roof for wielding a corkscrew. And it's been really been in the papers quite graphically, the Monterey Peninsula County Herald particularly, for the last three or four weeks. We got an incoming call here on the air.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, Robert. Hey, were you going over the hill today or Thursday?
Ooh, you're on the air.
Yeah.
We are going over the hill today to the Kensington Welfare Rights Union. It's going to be happening at, I guess, at 6 o'clock.
Are you going to the meal over there?
And we'll be going to the meal as well, yeah.
You're going to the meal as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where do I meet you for lunch?
Well, why don't you show up at the town clock at 4:45.
4:45? Okay, I'll
make it 4:30.
4:30? Okay, I'll be there.
All righty.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
And indeed, that's happening today at 4:30. You heard it here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Anyway, the Vaughn case is something we hope to cover in some detail, possibly with some interviews, certainly with an analysis of the news stories. Another case, what looks like blatant, dare we say, police murder, I don't know, but certainly a peculiar, seemingly unjustified shooting that the police initially did not want to release the names of the officers involved and still hasn't released the full reports. Apropos of which, we finally, after months of pro and con, to and from letters, have got the John Dine radio traffic tape. And for those of you who don't know, John Dine was the man shot dead by police officer Connor Carey in November of last year for allegedly wielding a toy gun. This was a point in some dispute, which has still been still not clear to many of us. Most of the witnesses dispute it, say that he had nothing in his hands, and that the toy gun found later, though it was his toy gun, was not in his hand at the time he was shot. That's the claim of eyewitnesses who saw no toy gun in his hand, no combat stance, as Police Chief Steve Belcher has claimed, and don't even agree with the story that the Citizens Police Review Board came up with, that he was reaching for a toy gun or some such thing. There is concern that something was rather pulled out of his backpack by Officer Over later and deposited on the ground. So, the what we did get, however, from the police department, we initially got a copy of the traffic on the radio, between the radio dispatcher and the officers involved, but that was a blank tape until after the actual shooting. We sent back that blank tape and we requested a full tape. Chief Belcher claimed we couldn't have such a tape, that he already sent the right tape, and there was numerous communications back and forth between myself, Chief Belcher, and Attorney Ed Fry, who also was making the request. Well, in the last few days, we have actually received the radio transmission tape of what was said between the police officers, Connor Carey and Officer Over, the two officers involved in the confrontation with Happy John Dine, and the radio dispatch central. And we'll be playing that probably on the next show on Thursday at 6 o'clock, or sometime between 6 and 8 on that show. Actually, we may play it today because I've just been informed by our next talk show host, Reckless, that she's going to be late. So the Bathrobe Spears broadside show will run for an additional half hour. Instead of ending at 1:30 as we usually do, we're going to end probably around 2 or whenever Reckless shows up in the studio. So we may be playing that tape today. That's coming up. We're also going to be having an interview shortly with Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board of Directors member, video journalist and street spirit writer Becky Johnson, who's just returned with me from a 10-day trip around the Southwest, various places, checking in with homeless protests and homeless demonstrators and homeless people generally. But Becky has also been instrumental in the campaign to repeal the sleeping ban, the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, which, as you probably know, those of you who have been following the issue, got plenty of signatures, but not enough for numerous reasons. And Becky's going to give us an update on the aftermath of that initiative, and particularly the upcoming Don't Sleep Tonight night, which will be coming up on June 29th. I think we actually have her in the studio now. Hi there, Becky. What's cooking?
Hi, Robert. I certainly wanted to tell our free radio listeners about what's coming up for the night of June 29th. We have declared that the night Don't Sleep Tonight night. And on that night, we are asking for people to refrain from sleeping between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m., the hours in which sleeping is a criminal act for homeless people who have been unable to make it into the shelter program, tiny though it is. We're declaring this night Municipal Code 6.36.010 criminalizes sleeping and covering up with blankets. So if people find this is too hard to refrain from sleeping between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. and goodness knows, after having spent a couple sleepless nights recently, it's very, very difficult to function the next day if you haven't had a good night's sleep. And we're asking people who have stayed up all night to go to work the next day and see what it's like to try to carry on your usual functions, your work, after having missed a night's sleep, or trying to sleep in the daytime and take naps if you can. We have an alternative, though. If that's just too hard to sleep, then you can go to sleep, sleep in your bed as you usually do, and get a good night's sleep, but don't use any blankets, because using a blanket between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. is a criminal act, too. So that would be just fine if you did that. Those who wish to pledge to stay awake the night of the 29th, you can, if you're online and have email access, you can send that directly to me by email to my email address. I am womanofsteel@cruiseio.com. That's WMNOFSTL, that's all one word, Woman of Steel, sort of, at cruiseio.com. If you also want to help out and just want to make us, we asking people to call Mayor Celia Scott at area code 408-429-3550 and leave a message for her. We're asking for, since our initiative to repeal the sleeping ban did fall short of the valid signatures we needed to qualify for the November ballot, the ball goes back to the City Council, and we're asking the City Council to adopt our initiative, which is very much constructed along the lines of what happened in Eugene, Oregon recently, and would decriminalize sleeping and decriminalize covering up with blankets while protecting residential and oceanfront areas. It's very reasonable, it's very humane, it's very needed. City of Santa Cruz needs to take a lead in this, and that's what we're asking people to do. Or you can give me a call. I'm at 408-429-8529. If you'd like to pledge that you will not sleep the night of June 29th, and maybe you can spend that time constructively doing what our good friend Howard Zinn suggested when he came to Santa Cruz in October 25th of 96, and he said, "I think that something should be done to interrupt the sleep of people who pass such laws." So that might be something for people to consider doing that night when they're awake in solidarity with homeless people who can't sleep at night.
Well, so the campaign to end the sleeping ban is not yet dead. I guess as long as people are sleepless, it's not going to die, because sleep is one of those things you got to have. I think it may have been covered a couple weeks ago by David Silva, who is one of the main people on the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, the initiative committee. But there may be still some people wondering what happened with that campaign, and why did you fall short, and what can you want to tell us something about that?
Well, we had some logistical problems in terms of when we were checking our accuracy rate and our error rate on our signature gathering. And while we did very well in the first 5 months with only a 10% error rate, because we didn't want to repeat what had happened with the Pelton Street Initiative, which collected a huge number of signatures but had so many were disregarded that they didn't qualify for the ballot, which was a very, very much a surprise to all of us and disheartening to our effort to gather signatures. When we had a big push at the end, our error rate went significantly up, and we knew at that point that we did not have enough signatures to qualify. But I think the biggest problem that our initiative undertook was dealing with the El Nino rains. We had five times the normal rainfall of any normal winter rain. It would have been a rainy, you know, winter, the rainy part of the year anyway for us, and we accepted that. But this was five times the normal rainfall. And that translated into approximately one-fifth the signature gathering time for our initiative. And the reason being that, of course, you could say, well, we could gather signatures indoors, but we found that gathering signatures indoors was very problematic, and we were driven out of all sorts of indoor areas, Costco, businesses. We were driven out of the foyer, they attempted to drive us out. Certainly made it very uncomfortable for us to gather signatures in the foyer of the Santa Cruz Public Library, the Santa Cruz Post Office. We were driven out of churches. People told us that, you know, our hostel, you know, this isn't the proper place to gather signatures in a church. Even though we did get a lot of support, for instance, Father Mike Marini of Holy Cross Church endorsed our initiative, signed it himself, and wrote positively about our initiative and the need to decriminalize sleep and the church bulletin. But still, even in his own congregation, we had people that came up to us and were hostile to us for gathering signatures outside of the church. Other places, I personally had some problems with La Posada Retirement Home on Frederick Street. This is a huge corporate-run retirement home that has 200 residents in it, 133 registered voters. And I went there to gather signatures along with a friend of mine who is a resident there. And I had dinner with her, and we were gathering signatures in the foyer, in the lobby, as people left the dining hall. And the manager came over and told me I was not allowed to do that there. I was not allowed to do it without permission, and really that it's I would not be allowed to do that at any time, that they would not give me permission, and I needed to leave the building immediately or I would be arrested. So that's pretty hostile, and I don't know how anyone could gather signatures in that kind of an environment indoors. So that pretty much left us with the outdoor area, and even with all that, we estimated that we gathered 3,200 valid signatures, and we needed about 3,800 to qualify for the November 98 ballot. So it was that's only 600 short by our estimation. So now that puts this initiative back into the hands of City Council, and that's our next effort, is that because we took a lot of time and got some very expert testimony, approximately 40 people helped us to draft a rewrite of the Santa Cruz camping ban law, municipal code 6.36010, and we believe that our rewrite From the people that we talked to when we were gathering signatures, we met with a positive response all over. We got an incredible number of endorsements. Some of the local endorsements that are significant are Santa Cruz Action Network, Community Action Board, WILF, Peace and Freedom Party, Green Party, and a tremendous number of individuals as well who endorsed our initiative. No organization other than the Santa Cruz Police Department came out to oppose our initiative. Even the Downtown Business Association, who we assumed would be our biggest opposition, when approached by the media, said that they had opted to take no position on our initiative. So that was a surprise to us, but it's positive that the writing is on the wall for everyone that there needs to be a change in this law.
Thank you, Becky Johnson. Incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, sorry getting so late into your radio show. I've had a pretty busy morning. This is David.
David Silva.
Yeah, congratulations on such a successful campaign with the sleeping ban, everybody. Everybody should know that, you know, for us to discover the big secret that 85% of the population thinks that this is a horrible law and should be changed is quite a success, because we had to uncover that because of all the falderal that so many city councils have done for so long. And so, you know, the days of the sleeping ban are numbered, and we should be celebrating. We do have to be a little more organized perhaps this time, maybe have some money up front to actually pay, you know, to pay signature gatherers and do it wham-bam. I think with the amount of support that we've seen, we could even do a special election. We were very, very afraid of a special election. We wanted to be in the general election so we'd have a huge voter turnout, but since this is a non-economic issue, I don't think we should even be afraid to do a special election on it. If we do, you know, do another initiative, it'd be nice if negotiations could lead the city council to come to see the light, so to speak. So what have you guys been talking about? I just tuned in. Sorry, I've been mostly sick and then busy this morning, and then I'm feeling well.
You're doing fine. We actually were talking, and you're supplementing the conversation quite nicely.
And you guys mentioned the 29th, the sleep fast. No sleep tonight.
We did mention the don't sleep tonight night. In fact, you'll be pleased to hear that Santa Monica, through the internet, and San Diego, the protesters at both their city halls. Mm-hmm. Santa Monica protested at the city hall. Seems to have it was not an evidence we went through, but the San Diego protesters were there, 150 to 200 strong.
Oh, good.
In fact, we slept out with them last week. They support fully Don't Sleep Tonight Night. And also, I got an email this morning from, or I should say, Becky Johnson got an email. I was reading her email from Minneapolis, from a woman who declares she will be in solidarity and not sleep that night.
I'm getting emails from Greens all over the state and the country who will not, our gubernatorial candidate, lots of Greens will not be sleeping that night.
Members of the Green Party.
Green Party, and they will be reporting to our city council the following day. You know, the results of their experiment.
Wow. Now, I understand.
Also, the Holy Cross Church, the leadership there I talked to today, are going to help. We don't have time to do postcards and the official kind of things, the rich people's campaigns, but, you know, this is a poor people's campaign. But we do manage to seem to be able to get the word out, and even the religious community will be coming in on this by next Monday.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess you've also been... there's been some talk about communicating with city council members and talking about some kind of a compromise proposal.
Yeah, there's feelers out, and there's people who maybe were, you might say, the fence sitters, the ones that were sort of standing aside that weren't really supporting us very strongly, who feel that we've made a point and are willing to act as negotiators for us. So there is some negotiating going on. That may include a compromise, and of course we want to have consensus on this, of excluding the downtown as the sleeping zone. And I would be willing personally to, you know, not that it personally affects me, it affects the homeless people, but to negotiate something like that. If there was a zone, if the community commercial zone actually allowed, was connected, in other words, if somebody from the east, eastern side of Santa Cruz City could actually be able to go all the way to the industrial park without being interrupted, the downtown area sort of interrupts the community commercial zones. So it seems to me that we would have to have a contiguous zone, mm-hmm, of sleeping, not just spots where they, you know, people can be left in without an island. So it would have to be a contiguous zone.
Well, they've already made a no being zone after dusk at the San Lorenzo River, which slices right through the town. So.
Yeah.
I guess you can walk through.
I believe you can cross the bridge.
Right, you can walk through.
Cross the bridge. I don't know if you can walk. I don't think you can walk through on a bank.
Yeah, you. Unless you. I guess you could. Unless you can walk on the water. I don't know what the.
Yeah.
You've been. You've also perhaps been keeping an eye, David, on the. I guess the campaign by Pat Clark of the NAACP,
yes,
who hosted the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban's benefit concert.
And he's also one of the people negotiating for us, and one of the people that will be joining us in the Don't Sleep Tonight.
Ah, really?
Sleep Fest. Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
They've been trying to get public concern, mobilization, and awareness against hate crimes, particularly regarding the reappearance of the Klan in Santa Cruz County. I found it kind of amusing when I was reading about this after returning yesterday from my trip that the individual in the sheriff's office who is concerned with hate crimes is none other than our old friend Deputy James Thurber. And Deputy Thurber, for those in our audience who don't know, has been a perpetrator of hate crimes repeatedly against homeless people and against people in courts. In fact, he's become so out of control that they moved him out of the court area. As an individual, I mean, he and I can speak on relatively amiable terms, but he's notorious. We had an individual who he arrested for smoking a cigarette at the Aptos Shopping Center. We've followed that case here on the air, the case of Brian Clark.
He's going to protect us from hate crimes, is he?
He is apparently the sheriff's department's choice to deal with, similar perhaps to the way Butchie Baker, or Sticky Fingers Butchie, was assigned, as I call him, to deal with crimes of violence against the homeless back in 1995.
Well, maybe they could have Officer Lefevre investigate the violation of the electoral process when homeless people with petitions were driven out of town during the initiative drive.
Or perhaps Sergeant Andy Crane could investigate violence against political activists at city council meetings.
Yeah, the violence. No comment at this time. We're getting real close to a court case here, Robert.
Yes. Actually, I will comment on it, however, by saying that you are engaged currently in a lawsuit against Sergeant Crane for
the city and former Mayor Mike Rodkin.
For throwing you into a pillar on September 10th, 1996, in the wake of a demonstration that you were not directly connected with, which was itself a peaceful demonstration, where people chained themselves to furniture around this very same issue, that of the sleeping ban and the right of homeless people to sleep at night.
Yeah.
The failure of the city council to even want to discuss the issue at all.
Well, the thing we've learned about this initiative drive is the city council is out of touch, greatly, greatly out of touch, I mean, with the most common, ordinary citizens of our city. I mean, anybody that walked a block, even, that went door-to-door at all, is should be really encouraged to know, you know, how much, you know, cruel and unusual laws really aren't wanted in this city by the majority, vast majority of the population. But, you know, we've got this whole city... what would you call it? Closed circuit city government with its committees and its same usual suspects, all talking to each other about the problems outside of this isolated world they live in, and that 4% of the population at the most really needs to wake up. And I think with us having things like this, sleep fast, and maybe we'll do it every 29th of the month. You know, maybe when the students come back, we'll have a walk the night sleep fast where people actually walk the streets to stay awake.
Mm-hmm. Sleepwalkers, we called it.
Yeah.
Back in 1988.
You know, we can continue to escalate this thing if they don't get the message, and of course we will escalate this thing if they don't get the message. But I think we got to give them time to absorb the truth, because it's probably a rude awakening to them. I know giving the city council time is probably anathema to you, but you know, we did go through this process. As far as I'm concerned, our El Nino extension is not expired yet.
Now, what is that El Nino extension?
Well, there was El Nino extensions given to contractors, El Nino extensions given to people that had to meet deadlines. Monies were transferred from one fund to another in order to allow projects to go forward.
Now, by the El Nino,
everybody dealing with the city had an El Nino extension.
By the El Nino extension, you mean, of course, an extension of a time and of a deadline normally given for a task or job because of the very peculiar inclement weather
We had people that had pneumonia, pneumonias, and we had pneumonias and deaths and misery in the first four months of our campaign that slowed us down quite a bit. I mean, your father had pneumonia. I mean, it was a really rough time for a lot of people, and for them not to acknowledge, you know, in the name of democracy, you know, and democratic process, that the El Nino affected democratic process as well, is really kind of putting their head in the sand, because they're simply saying, oh, we can't do that. We can't do anything about it. But they can.
But they certainly can. You did apply for that extension.
Yes, I applied for the
extension. We did, and the city clerk wrote you back, no dice, right?
The city clerk wrote us back that there is no such thing. Well, we know there is no such thing. We're demanding that they create such a thing. Mm-hmm. And they have the power to do that. Even though this city, like many of this size, turns over its...
You are, of course, talking about an extension for the amount of time that will be allowed for...
To gather signatures
for the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban.
And if that fails, which most likely will, because it requires them doing quite a bit, actually. I mean, they have to actually step outside of the state system of laws for petitions for a local community and start forming our own. So having an exception would be a bit of a legislative maneuver for our city attorney, but it's doable, and it's possible if they were sincere in acknowledging that, you know, people suffered and wintered out the storm, you know, and that we dealt with pneumonias and deaths and a lot of hardship, that they should in good faith make an attempt. But they're not even going to make an attempt, so they need to stand on guard, on alert, that we can have completely new initiative drive. Since we were smart enough not to file our petitions, we are not bound by the one-year limitation. We can file anytime we want to again.
You know, David, I originally mentioned on the show earlier when I wasn't sure whether you were going to call in or not.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of the show.
Right, no. Wait, of course. You're a man who's not only been active in the Green Party, and I'm going to ask you a bit about your conversations with Santa Monica Council Member Michael Feinstein, mm-hmm. who you've had some interesting dialogue with. But before I do, have you done any research into the upcoming City Council agenda on Tuesday, which will be the last City Council meeting until August?
Sorry to say that I haven't.
No problem.
I would like a lot of people there to give testimony at 7 o'clock on what their experiences were gathering gathering signatures, what their intentions are for the sleep fast. I would like a lot of people giving testimony. I would like to take up the whole half hour. Of course, I'm sure other people have other issues too. But anybody that was involved in the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban at all, show up and give some testimony.
That's be on Tuesday at 7 o'clock,
yeah.
The day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. I know
today the first day of summer already?
Today is the 21st. I spoke to Michael Feinstein, who's a Santa Monica City Council member, about a year ago, and he really was very upset about this proposed law to make it illegal for people to sit down in the promenade area, which is a sort of a downtown area, and in a law analogous to Santa Cruz's sit on the sidewalk, get a ticket, sit there twice, go to jail law, which is currently in force if you are within 10 feet of a storefront or 50 feet of an ATM. But apparently, his liberalism came to an end when Jennifer Wagoner of Santa Monica began a protest in front of City Hall about a month and a half ago, to demand that Section 8 housing commitments by the City Council be reaffirmed and that the homeless not be harassed for sleeping at night. And you had some conversations with him on the Internet. He's not only a member of the Santa Monica City Council, but he's a rather well-known Green Party politician, right, of which you are also a member of that Green Party.
Yeah, he's one of the most prominent members of the Green Party, and for many members of the Green Party, he's self-anointed.
Now, the Green Party has been famous in some areas for being at least having a reputation of extreme liberalism or progressivism in the sense that we wish our city council here in Santa Cruz were progressive. For example, in Arcata, where I guess you've got your first Green Party majority, the little town north of Eureka.
We have a few towns now.
Okay. I wanted to hear more about that. In Northern California, there was a big controversy about Food Not Bombs and whether they should be forced to go to, closed down because they were not getting the permits that supposedly were required. Again, the whole permit controversy arising with Free Radio and Food Not Bombs, interesting analogies that often the process is simply a way of strangling poor organizations that want to do things that their merchant organizations or wealthier corporate organizations don't want them to do. In any case, there was this Green Party majority up in Arcata, and the Greens have generally had this reputation for being concerned with the human rights and poor people's rights. What happened with Michael Feinstein? What have you found in your discussions with him?
Okay, well, I've had a lot of discussion with him, and it's starting to sound like, he's been known as an arrogant person. he lives a simple, humble life, vegetarian, very devoted, and he's converted his life to simplicity, and he believes in ecological principles and so forth. But when it comes to being a city father, which he now is, the patriarch, has come out in its reactionary mode, not unlike Mike Rodkin. Some of the things that Mike Feinstein is saying sound very much like some of the things Mike Rodkin says. If it just weren't for the protesters, I could get some things done in the back rooms. If it just weren't for you guys, you're making it bad. We're trying to help you, because of protests, you're making it difficult. There's going to be a backlash. All this kind of stuff. If we, there's so many homelessness in Los Angeles. If we don't, how can we single-handedly have no, free sleeping zones in Santa Monica? That means we'll attract all the people from Beverly Hills. I don't know how many homeless people are in Beverly Hills anyway. God, you can't even walk the streets in Beverly Hills. It's against the law to preambulate in Beverly Hills. But anyway, the same kind of arguments we've heard from Rodkin, over and over again, we're starting to hear from Mike. So I have severely challenged him on that, and he is meditating on that and gone into a period of silence, and he's going to consider whether he's going to be joining us on the sleep fast. I suggested to him that maybe he needs to do that to get in really in touch with the reality.
That's
of what
Don't Sleep Tonight night coming
the
up.
Don't Sleep Tonight night
on June 29th.
It's an opportunity for people to experience what homeless people have to experience every night, you know, with the fear of tickets, courts, and then, of course, if two nights in a row, that would be jail.
Well, I think you're being a little charitable. You say he's gone into a period of seclusion, or just is he stonewalling and not talking to you?
Well, at first it sounded like that, but I have gotten, let's see, many, many people to speak to him, and he's in a period of reflection right now. I expect to be hearing from him soon.
Well, I got another question for you about another one of your favorite Green Party politicians, former Governor Jerry Brown.
Yeah, he's a Labor Party, actually, but...
Oh, he is?
Yeah. He's supported quite a bit by the Green Party, but he's a Labor Party member.
Well, you certainly have been a supporter of Jerry Brown.
Well, yeah, I was his campaign chairman here for this congressional district in 92 when he ran for president, and I tried to keep We the People going for quite a while here.
Jerry Brown, of course, as we know, won the primary in Oakland for mayor and is probably a shoe-in for that office in November.
No, he won it already.
He's already won the office?
He won more than majority, so he won it already.
Well, but he isn't the mayor yet.
Yeah, the term of office, I think, begins January 1st or something like that. Or something, but he already won.
Isn't there an election in November?
Yeah, but he doesn't have to run because he got more than 50%. He got an overwhelming 60-something percent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All his opponents didn't even get 40-something percent.
But that was all simply in the Democratic primary, right?
No, that's a nonpartisan race, and if any person gets more than 50%, they win. That doesn't have to be a runoff.
So Brown is, in fact, now the mayor of Oakland on January 1st or whatever.
Mayor-elect of Oakland, yes.
Now, in Oakland,
I'm not sure if it's January 1st or November 28th or whatever it is. You know,
I noticed that Brown is not...